Welcome to the People Show. It is Randeep Janda and Bick Nizar. Bick will be joining us in a couple of minutes here. Sportsnet 650. Join in the conversation, 650-650, Dunbar Lumber text line, the smart alternative. Visit Dunbar Lumber on Bridge Street in Ladner or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. We're getting set up here. The point streak is over for your Vancouver Canucks. It was a nice run at nine games, but you ran into the Florida Panthers, and that is a juggernaut of a team. We found out why yesterday as the measuring stick road trip started off. While we get Bick set up here in the next few minutes, we got an extension of the Canucks Hour with one half of the Canucks Hour, Dodd. What's going on, Jamie?
The better half, right? That's yeah. If you had to choose.
Drance isn't here anymore. We can say that.
Yeah, I sabotaged Bick's clean feed connection here, so I'm forcing myself, inserting myself as the producer into the show, sticking around for a little bit.
This is what you do when you're trying to make it in the
business.
That's right. You sometimes sabotage the Wi-Fi.
Look, Bick's my guy, but you know you got to do what you got to do. Business is business, man.
It's business, man. This is a Hollywood Hogan type of heel turn right here from Jamie Dodd. It is the People Show on Sportsnet 650, and we're gonna start off talking some Canucks. Of course, the Canucks start off that road trip. And, okay, listen, it was not a great night when you look at the score. It was not a good night when you look at some of that process that we want to focus on with the Vancouver Canucks. They, over a nine-game stretch, outside of that LA game, were looking really good. And then you run into the juggernaut that is the Florida Panthers. And for all the hyperbole that people thought we were tossing around in the city about the Florida Panthers, I know, you know, Drance was getting dragged in the Texan box a little bit as well, saying, are you still working PR for the Florida
still
Panthers?
Still doing PR there, man.
I have been high on the Florida Panthers for the last couple of years as well. But we kind of know the hype now. And looking at that game, how much of what we saw yesterday was the Canucks? And how much of what we saw yesterday was the Florida Panthers? And, you know, this is, I think, going to be a real question, a real assessment that will be done about the Vancouver Canucks moving forward with this road trip, because you're not playing your run-of-the-mill opponent here. This is not a Pacific Division playoff hopeful. These are really, really good teams. And for most of these teams, this is kind of the standard where you give them an opportunity, Jamie, and they're going to hit you. It's going to hurt.
And I think there's a temptation. I mean, first of all, you know, we all like to poke fun at Dranther, but you know, whether it's not just him saying that the Panthers are a great team. They're a legit.
I say it myself.
Yeah, they're a legit fantastic team in the NHL. And look, we'll see where it goes in the playoffs, but in terms of the regular season, they are one of the best in the NHL. There's no disputing that. Now, I think there's a temptation to look at this game and see the 5-2 scoreline and kind of throw your hands up and say, see, I knew it. You know, the Canucks are frauds. They can't hang with the big boys. Blow it all up. Start trading people at the deadline. I don't really think that's what that game tells us, though, right? Like, there were legitimate. I know it's weird to talk about positives you can take away from a 5-2 game that you were trailing 5-1 after 40 minutes, but there was a long stretch of that game where the Canucks more than hung with the Panthers, where they were the better team in that game. So it's kind of a weird one to try to break down, because you're never going to feel good coming out of a 5-2 game. You're never going to say, wow, that was awesome. We can really, you know, I feel really good about that performance. But to me, that was not your typical 5-2 loss, right? Like, there were a lot more positives for me than this scoreline suggests.
Well, there were moments in that game, you know, the start was ugly. The start was something that you look back and say, okay, unlucky to a certain extent, because the Canucks, through Vasily Podkolzin, a couple of other opportunities, they did have a couple of shots on goal early there. So, you know, you pick a corner in one of them, we might be talking about a different game or a different process altogether. But Florida hits you, and Thatcher Demko, I heard the post-game show, I saw some of the tweets come in on the first three goals of that game. I know we're used to Thatcher Demko just saving the Vancouver Canucks, but I don't lay blame on Thatcher Demko. I saw some of the texts. I saw the tweets. I heard some of the calls. I don't think that was on Thatcher Demko. That was a goalie that didn't see the first three goals. There's traffic in front of him.
Yeah.
You're going to have those games from Thatcher Demko.
Well, here's the thing. Does Thatcher Demko at his best maybe find a way to save one or two of those goals in that game? Yeah, maybe, probably. We've seen Thatcher Demko pull off some truly incredible saves and have some truly incredible performances. But even Thatcher Demko, even a goalie as talented as he is going to have performances last night, like he did last night. And that's not to say he was awful, but he's not going to be at his absolute peak where he's making these incredible, mind-blowing saves literally every night. You can't expect that from your goalie. You're going to have games where, as you said, not that he was clearly at fault on any of the goals, but he just didn't make that, oh my gosh, I can't believe he made that save to keep the team in the game. That's going to happen sometimes. And that can't be, if that's an automatic loss for your team, right, to not have Thatcher Demko at the peak of his powers, that's a problem. That says something else about the rest of your team. You can't lay the blame at Demko. That's just a reality. There's going to be nights like that.
No, and there was a talking point, you know, heading into that game of Thatcher Demko, especially when you've got a long layoff, your goalie's got to be sharp. Of course, that's been the recipe for success for the Canucks all year long, but that shouldn't be an automatic out when you don't get maybe an A-plus game from your goalie. You're going to need the rest of the team to step up through 60 minutes, especially against an elite team. That's what the Florida Panthers are in today's NHL. They are an elite team. We want you to be involved in the show as always. You are the People Show. You're listening to the People Show. Jimmy, I got a fun exercise. Used to be a very traumatic experience for me when I was a kid, because nothing's worse than bringing a report card home. Like walking home, you remember the feeling when you'd be walking home from school and the report card's in your hand or in your bag and you're like, oh man, this is rough. Like, how do I explain this to my parents? I feel like the Canucks are doing that with Jim Rutherford right now. He's the parent and every effort on this road trip, sure, it might be graded on a curve because you've got a really good set of teams that you have to play against, but this is a report card on a measuring stick road trip. So after every single game on this road trip, we're going to come up with our report cards. How did we feel the Vancouver Canucks played against the Florida Panthers last night? And I want to start off with your grade first, because I think this is important. You grade each game, and then you have that final exam after the fifth game against Nashville. And you essentially provide an update on where this team's at.
Yeah. So this is like your midterm.
It's not a final. It's a midterm.
First of all, Randy, are you telling me that Randeep Janda, young Randeep Janda, wasn't on the honor roll at Killarney Secondary?
Grade 12, and I could pick what class that I wanted to take. That was my only honor roll year. Elementary school was rough. Rough. So no, not an honor roll student.
Well, hey, you rounded into four. I know.
Look at me now.
Look at you now. Living the dream.
Everything's coming up Randeep now.
Yeah. Here, it's, as I said, it's hard for me to, you know, because as I said, there's a lot of positives in this game. But if you come in with a B letter grade in a 5-2 loss, it feels kind of ridiculous. You know what I mean? So I think I kind of have to bump them down just a little bit. I guess I'll go with a B minus, which still maybe I'm feeling a little bit generous, but I think you do have to take into account the layoff, take into account the quality of the competition, the fact that the scoreline, you know, that easily could have been a one goal game at the end of things for the Vancouver Canucks. And I think when you give credit to the Florida Panthers, yeah, okay, that was, you know, it wasn't a standout performance. It's not something to write home about, but it's not something to get you grounded for a couple of weeks either, right? It's not something to hang your head about, like, oh man, how did we turn in that kind of performance?
Yeah, you were cramming up until the last second, and you end up getting a less than ideal grade from your perspective. B minus, I'm not going to lie. I'm kind of headed in the same direction, but I was looking more C+.
Yeah.
It's not a B-worthy performance for me.
Yeah, that's fair.
I still think it's in that, like, you know, you're definitely like a 2.5 GPA if you're talking about four here. The reason I think they're in that range is I didn't think, and I mentioned this on the broadcast with Bash yesterday, I didn't think they played a bad or a horrible game. You look at some of the sloppiness, that was certainly there. They lacked the finishing that elite teams have, especially in that beginning of that second period where Tyler Mott has a chance. Brock Besser has that great chance from, you know, being set up from JT Miller. And there's a great play that, you know, Quinn Hughes makes, gets the puck up to JT Miller, and Brock Besser has a chance there to score, can't do that. But they lost the game in key moments. And it was that lack of clinical finishing, right? To borrow a soccer term. But even later on in that period, where Tyler Mott, you can disagree with that penalty. Absolutely. I saw, you know, Canucks Twitter just losing it. But you got to, in that moment, you move on. You try to kill off that penalty, and you try to move on. And in that moment, they lost the game. They allow a goal there. Shortly thereafter, allow another one. And that was pretty much it. So even though I think, you know, even in that second period, they were playing a much more physical game, they were playing a little bit faster, I wasn't mad at their game totally, but in those key moments where, you know, good teams or strong teams find ways to get that goal, the Canucks lack that. And that kind of tells you where they're at when they're facing some of the best in the NHL. Good teams finish those chances, and teams that are, I think, in a position where some of the best in the league finish those chances, and we saw that from Florida.
Well, and Bruce Boudreau said it last night after the game, right? Florida doesn't need a lot of opportunities to score goals. They're really good at converting their chances, and we saw that. They didn't. It wasn't even necessarily the grade-A chances. Obviously, Sasha Barkov did, but, you know, the Sam Reinhart tip, which is an incredible play. Right? Aaron Ekblad to just get in the right position and let that shot go and pick his spot to beat Thatcher Demko. You know, the Maxi Mammon goal from in close, none of them were necessarily highlight reel plays, but they took advantage of their opportunities. And I thought if the Canucks were going to win that game, they were going to have to do the same thing against Sergei Bobrovsky. And Bobrovsky had a really strong night last night at the end of it by the percentages. And if you look at his stats going into the game, you might think, oh, hey, he's had a bit of a bounce back. But the last couple months haven't been strong for Sergei Bobrovsky. So I thought the Canucks were going to have their opportunities to get goals. And especially early in that second period when they were trailing 2-1, I mean, there was a long stretch there where I thought they are right in this game. Like, they're going to get the tying goal because they're generating pressure, and eventually they're going to beat Sergei Bobrovsky. But to your point, Randeep, it's one thing to generate those chances and generate that pressure. The best teams find a way to convert, find a way to make you pay. The Canucks weren't able to do that, got put in a tough position by the refs, and Florida made them pay, and that was kind of it. That was the end of it. You saw that kind of gap in just that killer instinct, right? Like, the Canucks couldn't take advantage of when Florida, they didn't need a lot of opportunities, but when they had them, they punished the Canucks.
Yeah, they wait for those mistakes. And the classic example was shorthanded, where, you know, Sasha Barkov reads that play like a book, where you're seeing that play move up the boards. He knows he's got the edge on Oliver Ekman-Larsson. That's all he needs. He needs that half a second of a head start, and he's gone. Where, you know, good teams do that. Good teams find those gaps and find those weaknesses. And you saw that from the Panthers. From a Canucks perspective, though, and when you lose 5-2, it is something that, you know, you look at and say, okay, on the scoreboard, you got worked. There was a moment, though, at the end of the first period where the Canucks, there's some optimism there. There was a moment at the beginning of the second period, you're saying, okay, there's a chance to get back in this game. And they looked like they were going to do it. A couple of those chances to start off that second period. One of the positives that I look at last night's game is that pushback. Because in the first few minutes of that first period, they were, you know, they had a couple of shots on goal, but if you looked at the possession time, Florida started to really you know, lean into the game a little bit more. Physically, the Tyler Mott hit, we saw that. They were starting to up their physical play. The fact that you go down 2-0, it's not good. You know, you got to close on the blue line a little bit more. You got to make sure that you get in the shooting lanes and you block those shots whenever, or at the very least, pressure the point. But the response after that, the JT Miller fight with Gudas, that's what I want to see. That's what I care about, where, yes, you are up against it. You're playing a team that is acknowledged as one of the best teams, if not, you know, a top two team in the NHL right now. Do you have enough to fight back and say, all right, we're in this game. We're going to push ourselves to get back into that game. Miller was a part of it. But even in that second period, Jamie, you had a moment where, you know, these guys were kind of stepping into that play a little bit more. They're adding some physical aspects to their game. So even though you lose, the reason I give a, you know, higher grade than most, or some people would say, well, how can you give that much of a grade when they lost 5-2? It's because you're not necessarily competing against the Florida Panthers in the standings.
Right.
This team is on its own track. It's going to take a little bit longer. But those key moments in Game 5 this year, they would have buckled. They would have crumbled. That game last night would have been uglier. We're talking about potentially a 7-8 spot. Last night, they actually showed some pushback, and that was shown even late in that game when Tanner Pearson drops the gloves, messing up a pretty, you know, tough customer, Mackenzie Weegar.
Well, and I said on Canucks Hour, you just think of the circumstances going into that game, and then you're down 2-0 early. It would have been pretty easy for the team to pack it in. And as you said, Randeep, it feels like we've seen that from the team earlier in the year under Travis Green, right? Where you could counter a little bit of adversity, the breaks don't go your way, tough start to a game, and it just kind of snowballs from there, and it turns really, really ugly. That easily could have happened last night, and they didn't. And you get the Dickinson goal, and then Florida, I thought, did a pretty good job of kind of reestablishing control of the game for the remainder of the first period. But again, what happens at the start of the second? The Canucks come out and take control of the game. And they were right in that game until the thing, until, as you said, the Tyler Mott penalty and then the goals bang, bang like that from Florida. But the fact that even after that, into the third period, when the game was out of reach, right, you didn't have a lot of hope of actually getting a result from that game, they were still playing hard. And I think that has to bode well for the remainder of this road trip, right? I don't get the sense that the coach, that the team is looking at this and saying, oh man, we lost 5-2 in the first game of this road trip. This is going to be a disaster. Holy cow, how are we going to get any points? Like, they worked hard in that game. They're probably pretty excited to get back at it against Tampa because they feel, you know what, if we can capture what we did for the middle portion of that game, we actually have a decent chance of getting a result there.
Okay, how much of this, and you mentioned Tampa, I think a lot of it, when you're giving the Canucks a higher grade, it has to do with the Florida Panthers, though, right? I think it's an acknowledgement of how good this team is. And
yep.
That's why, you know, you look at what the Canucks were able to do last night, or what they did, you know, that's potentially a reason why we're saying you got to look at the big term, like the long-term picture here. And we got Tommy B coming in on the text line, 650, 650. I've seen Florida play way better. We were lucky that we got Florida on an off night. And that's a valid point.
That's fair.
Florida against Carolina, you know, on a Saturday last week, they were strong. They played much better than this. Even their game against the Dallas Stars, they gave up more that night, but there was more quick strike ability. In the third period, the Florida Panthers took their foot off the gas. They were playing more conservative. They were playing a passive style where they were coming with one forechecker. So could they have made it a little bit more aggressive? Could they have taken the Vancouver Canucks lunch money? Probably, but they didn't want to. And, you know, I'm going to bring in Bic here as well. Bic's ready to go. Bic, we're talking about...
friends.
Hey, what's going on, man? I know lunchtime is important for you, yeah. but you really extended it today, didn't you?
Stop.
18 minutes late, Bic. Come on, man.
It's definitely not me.
Got it. Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Did you have a positive experience with the report cards? Because we were going through the Canucks report card from last night.
So you gave a C+, right?
I gave a C+, and Jamie, B-.
I think I'm kind of land on B- as well. It's a positive performance based on the delay. But as far as actual performance, because they didn't win, you can't give like a B+ or an A.
No, man, it's not. Yeah, like B is a bit of a tough one for me. I'm not in that letter grade. It's still like, it's still a loss. It's still some negatives in the game. But you also have to look at the competition. The competition was an elite team. Looks like we might have lost Bic there, so we're going to reset that conversation when he gets back, just having some technical difficulties on his end. But you heard, you know, Bic came on to come with a B-, so we are coming with the letter grades. Come in with your 650, 650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line. We had Marcus come in with a B. The Canucks played okay against Florida. And the reason we're trying to do, you know, this report card is it's a measuring stick road trip for this organization, for this team, for this group of players against some of the best in the NHL. So on a scale of, you know, A to D to F, whatever you want to put it to, how did they play last night? And at the end of it, we talked a lot about how Calgary, when this measuring stick road trip came up for them, they got worked 16-6. They were outscored in three games against the Florida teams and the Carolina teams, or against the Carolina Hurricanes. But, you know, this wasn't a situation for them. They failed that road trip. And there was a lot of learnings coming out of that for that team. Whereas the Canucks, through one game, I think there are some negatives. If you look at the negatives, and we can focus on that a little bit here as well, is, you know, the sloppy plays. That was something that Bruce Boudreau acknowledged after the game as well. Not connecting on passes. Defensive zone breakdowns, you know, especially that Max Mammon goal, that was an ugly one. Part of the reason that maybe Nils Höglander didn't see much of the ice. He was -3 on the night, and he was on the ice for that goal as well, where him and Tanner Pearson were both chasing the play, and the rotations weren't crisp. Something you'd expect coming out of a lengthy layoff, but there was some sloppy play. I think another part of that conversation is the Elias Pettersson factor, and we'll get into this. Is it physical? Is it mental? But what we saw from him again yesterday was playing a decent first period where you could say, okay, there's some things that he's doing well. But as the game went on, he started to lose that confidence. And you saw that on that play in the second period where there was a drop pass from Nils Höglander, and Pettersson just completely fans on it and loses confidence. The problem is, it's not a solitary play, Jamie. It's a play where Pettersson fans on the puck, and the immediately right after, what you see is him kind of lose confidence for the rest of the game. Yeah. So it feels like with Elias Pettersson, he builds that confidence until a key moment in the game, and we've seen him fail in games in those key moments, and that just undercuts his confidence, and it's like he's got to start back at square one. It was another example last night.
And I know you guys talked about it on the show yesterday. Drance and I talked about it a little bit yesterday as well. You know, we've seen so many different combinations of Elias Pettersson's line mates, and yesterday it was Tanner Pearson and Nils Höglander. And, you know, I kind of made the point, and I think you were saying as well, maybe that Tanner Pearson ability to get in front of the net, create some havoc, maybe that's what it's going to take for Elias Pettersson to get that greasy goal and start getting his confidence back. And we didn't really see that materialize last night. I know Nils Höglander had a rough night defensively. As you said, the lack of confidence from Elias Pettersson on display again. I didn't necessarily think that Tanner Pearson clicked with those two on a line. So you're kind of, there's just this constant sensation with Elias Pettersson of being back to square one, right? Like every time you think there's a little bit of progress, then as you said, there's a whiff on that Nils Höglander pass, and it feels like we're right back to where we've been all season. And you're trying so hard to find those meaningful steps forward that he's going to take to get back to the elite player that we're used to seeing. And I don't know what the next kind of button to push for Bruce Boudreau is at this point.
You can move him around the lineup. You can give him an opportunity, even the pep talks in practice of, hey, you're working really hard, I like your game. Like, you're hearing the right things from Bruce Boudreau, but at some point, you need your game breaker to be your game breaker. And I am very patient with Elias Pettersson based on the fact that I think it's going to take a little time. Look at Barkov, look at Huberdeau. They weren't born this way. They developed into players that eventually got better. Eventually, now you're at a position where you can rely on them, game in, game out. Sasha Barkov is an elite player. We saw that in a two-way sense yesterday. Jonathan Huberdeau is... there's a reason he's a top five scorer in the NHL. He's elite as well, but they didn't get there overnight. But with Elias Pettersson, when you're getting that opportunity, Nils Höglander has a bad night. When you play less than 10 minutes, yeah, it's a bad night. But he does set you up for that pass, which is something that a confident Elias Pettersson's roofing that. Probably 9 times out of 10 a couple of years ago. And that confidence is simply not there. Hit us up with your letter grades for the Canucks in the game against Florida last night. I'm going to tease the wrong answers only before we go to break here. You may have noticed Kodak Black was in the audience, in the crowd for the Florida Panthers.
I saw one or two people mention it, yeah.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was interesting. He was having a good time. He was finding entertainment in many different ways at a hockey game last night in Sunrise, Florida. So our wrong answers only today. Who should the Panthers invite to their game next? Their next home game. Who should they invite next?
Tough act to follow for the next celebrity guest at a Florida Panthers game. Really? I wonder if you're going to get the same suite or if you're going to request a different suite than Kodak Black got.
You know what the best part was? The Panthers, like, brass yes. were sitting right next to him as well. So those sideways glances trying to maybe not catch or indeed catch of what was going on. Hit us up with your wrong answers only. Who should the Panthers invite to their game next? 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line. We're going to be joined by Mike McKenna, former NHL goalie, former Vancouver Canuck, next on Sportsnet 650.
All right, now we can do this. Welcome to...
We got him. We got
him. People show. We got him. We got him. What are you, George Bush on the... fateful press conference. It's like, ladies and gentlemen, we got him.
Yeah,
we got him.
I never aspired to be George Bush, all right?
All right. People show. Back at it. I am finally back here. Vic Nazar, Randy Janda, Jamie Dodd, Eddie Gregory running the show today. If you want to interact, as always, 650, 650. I missed the entire first segment, guys. Like, where do we leave it up? I was just saying, B-minus is where we're there. What else did I miss here?
Well, we started talking about last night's game, but wrong answers only is what
yes.
we got to.
Yes.
And it's a good one today. We all saw what happened with Kodak Black. And that was, okay, good game to watch. A lot going on in the NHL, but Kodak Black took over the NHL last night. And even
yeah,
the NHL deleted their tweet. Did you see that?
Yeah, they'd be like, hey, man, welcome to the game. And it's like, all right, delete, we got to get delete. Out of here. Delete, delete, delete. I don't know. Lean into it. Embrace it.
He got a new audience definitely tuning into the NHL last night. I don't know if that's the way you want them to tune in, but hey, new audience, I suppose.
Does he have a new album coming out? Like, was this part of a promo tour for him? Like, hey, you would be a great way to go viral before the new album drops.
No, I think he was just living his life, man. I don't think this was a publicity stunt. This is Kodak Black's life.
Just a regular Tuesday.
Party follows him. Just going up on a Tuesday, right?
650 into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Your wrong answers only. Gary from the North Shore wants to invite Dale Tallon here.
Okay. That might be a way to cleanse the box, I guess, if anything. We got Roby the bus driver coming in with, the Panthers need to invite the Pope next to give some spiritual healing to that private box.
Urban Meyer is a suggestion. I mean, it wasn't so dissimilar from similar dancing.
It could be.
Oh, man, lots of good text coming in here. 650, 650. Keep the thoughts coming in. As far as your wrong answers only, who should the Panthers invite to their next game? Just kind of rewinding here, as I kind of got cut off there. Just as far as grades, I'm sure you guys talked about it too. But B-, I thought they played fine. They looked like a team that was... not as sharp as a team that's been playing regular games. You know, the key moments, they lost. They lost key moments, and there's certain things that over the course of time you're going to figure out and understand and, you know, just the regular processes of a game. But when you're not sharp and you're playing from behind, it can look a lot worse than it is. Let's talk to Mike McKenna about... the Canucks game last night, and a lot of things across the league as well. Former NHL goalie and NHL analyst at DailyFaceoff.com. Mike, we will continue this every week with you. Has anybody reached out on your white Canucks jersey? were there any hits from our discussion last week?
No. I think it's a lost cause at this point. Send another friendly Facebook message to the one person I think who potentially might have it or know where it is and have never heard back. So, the great white whale. It is my white number 56 jersey that I wore in two games as a backup for the Vancouver Canucks. So maybe someday, but you know what? Until then, we can always talk hockey. So let's do that instead of reminiscing on the past and missing jerseys.
All right. Don't worry. You're on the people show, though. We'll get the people behind it. We'll try to see, you know, you don't worry about it. We'll work on it in the meantime.
Deal. I'm all for it. I only charge a minimal amount when it shows up, okay?
All right.
So last night, the Canucks go up against the NHL elite and the Florida Panthers, and the score line reads 5-2. You know, when you haven't played in so long, you know, the point I was just kind of making is you're going to slip up on minor details, and the Panthers look like a team that was capable of capitalizing on those minor details, whether you miss them or they convert on their own chances themselves. Was that a game last night you look at as, even though the result was still something, a positive for Vancouver?
You know, I think it's a game where you're coming back and you're obviously haven't played in a long time, and that's not easy, you know, and it looked like it too. And that's where I think if you're the Canucks, you kind of have to take that one with a grain of salt and say, okay, that probably wasn't going to be our best game. We haven't played in, 10 days, and Florida's been playing and playing well. But I didn't really like the way the Canucks played. I thought that Florida was just so much faster on pucks, and Canucks just look lethargic to me. And I heard you guys mention it earlier, like playing from behind is just difficult. You know, when you're down 2-0 to start the game, and I love that JT Miller went after Gudas after the second. I mean, how many times have you seen that before? Ever. You know, guy scores a goal and then we fight right away. And it did give a little bit of fight to Vancouver. And at least Dickinson got a goal before the end of the first. But that second period was just crushing for the Canucks. It looked like their feet were in quicksand to me for a lot of it, despite what, you know, the scoreboard, it, you know, what the shots may have looked like. The scoreboard is what matters, right? So just a tough night for them. I mean, you put up that many shots on goal, but it just, to me, it wasn't what you expect from there. And it hadn't been that same level that they'd played before going on that long pause.
Mike, when I was listening to the post-game show here on Sportsnet 650, I was very surprised to hear some criticism of Thatcher Demko, and it feels like we are so used to his game-saving stops that when he doesn't have a spectacular game, you know, people are shocked. But what did you make of his effort? Because I felt the first three goals of the game, like, he didn't even see them, let alone trying to stop them.
Yeah, and that's one of the details that you look at, especially from a team that's coming back, is like your D and your goalie have to be in sync. And not just D, I mean, really everybody in the defensive zone. Like, when they're taking his eyes away, when they're stepping in front of him, when they're not able to clear lanes, like, it makes life harder on you. And, like, Mammon's goal coming out of the corner on the backhand from a no-look pass like that, you're going to blame him on that? You're going to blame him, you know, on Barkov streaking in? Like, I don't see any fault there. And I think that if you're Thatcher Demko, man, that's a guy who deserves a pass for a game. Like, he has absolutely held the Canucks in so far this season. And I didn't see anything there to make me worried about it. I thought that there was just a ton of goals that look like to me, again, especially Mammon's, like that backhand, come on, like nobody shoots it from there in the first place. And you got Ekblad's floating them in from the point and you got people right in front of you. Like, he's doing everything he can to find it. It still goes wide and goes in. So I would not look that and put that on Demko's shoulders at all. And usually the shots on goal are the other way around. You know, usually it's Demko bailing out the team. And in this case, the Canucks just didn't score enough. They didn't bring it for their goalie last night.
Was it the type of performance that you can say that it's moving forward versus the opponents that they are going to play, Tampa, Carolina, Washington, mm-hmm. Nashville? Like, it's a very difficult road trip and kind of peeking up ahead. Was it the type of performance that you can say, hey, at least that's something we can build upon given that they're going to be playing some very high-end competition here on this trip?
Well, I think in some ways, yes, because they just got moving again. And what I really liked about the Canucks game is they just didn't quit. You know, they kept playing hard through the third period. Like I said, they weren't crisp. Their details weren't there. Some of those mental things that we discussed earlier weren't where they needed to be. But just being able to have some fight, you know, in the third period. And it wasn't Tanner Pearson's night, but at least he's on the score sheet, right? Like, there was some pushback. So I take that as a positive. I take at least, you know, having players engaged that you would hope. But, I mean, you got to have more from Pedersen. Like, how can Pedersen only have a couple shots on goal that game, right? Like, there's things that need to happen for that team to be successful. And going into Tampa especially, I mean, that team's hot, and they're going to have to shut down some big-time players. And, you know, you're not facing a weak club here. This is the Lions' dead, man. Palat and Point are on fire right now. So it's going to be a tall task, but it's also a good measuring stick against all these teams in the East that are really playing strong hockey.
Before we move on to the Tampa Bay Lightning, the Florida Panthers, it felt like last year against Tampa in the playoffs, that was like their rite of passage where they proved to the NHL mm-hmm. that they could go with the best. Is this team, you know, when you stack them up against Tampa this year, I hope they meet in the playoffs because that would be one nasty series, but are they, in your eyes, a legit cup contender that could get it done?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that, you know, the early part of the year, the real question was, okay, Joel Quenneville resigns. Andrew Brunette takes over. What is going to happen? You've got an assistant coach who's never been ahead before in the NHL. And, you know, things went okay at first. They were fine. And then they hit a troublesome patch at the beginning of November. They lost four straight games and they're coming back home. And I'm thinking, man, if they don't win a game or two here, we may see a new head coach in Florida. And from that point forward, the Florida Panthers beat the Islanders that night at home and they've rolled. They went rattled off four straight. They're resilient. They obviously believe in the systems that they're playing, but they got some X factors, man. Like, Jonathan Huberdeau should be in the talk right now for the Hart conversation. He has been absolutely incredible for that team. And we all, I mean, I think Barkov is still probably the best player on Florida, but I don't know how you can deny what Jonathan Huberdeau's done for that team. He's so dynamic, the way he moves with the puck, his shot, all that. And they've added that depth, you know, bringing in Reinhart and Bennett. And you can't sleep on their blue line either. I mean, Ekblad is playing mega minutes and he's got pretty good help around him. So I think they're solid. I would definitely worry though, if anything happens to Bobrovsky, they could use some depth at goaltender, but if Bob's on his game, I think Florida's got every bit as much of a chance as Tampa or anyone else.
not that the NHL breaks it up by region or anything, but the power used to be, or the difficult road trip used to be California, right? You go to San Jose, LA, Anaheim, it's so tough. Now it seems like it's Tampa, Florida, and Carolina, that trio, that Southeast trio, it's so tough to go through there and come up with points and have success. Looking at Tampa and Carolina come up ahead, what part of their games do you look at and say, man, like it's... Like, how are the Canucks going to fare against those teams? You mentioned Palat and Point. What else stands out? What else stands out for those two teams?
Well, the two teams play a little bit different. I mean, Carolina is just really, really good with their gaps and their neutral zone, and the way that they forecheck is just all about pressure in a smart, controlled manner. They run a 2-on-2 down pretty deep. They pressure the D. And, you know, Tampa Bay is similar, but Tampa Bay, I think, is probably a more top-end skilled team. You have to stay out of the box against Tampa Bay, but you can also beat Tampa Bay in transition. You know, sometimes they can be so aggressive offensively that if you can create turnovers, if you can block shots to go the other direction, those are things that will work into Vancouver's favor. So, I mean, you're looking for JT Miller to go the other way. You're looking for their top players to create those turnovers and rushes, because it's going to be really tough to possess the puck against either of these clubs. Carolina, you got to out-system them. You got to play better within your system than Carolina does. And that's really difficult to do because that team is so good and so tight on pucks. Their routes are strong. And I think with anytime you look to Carolina, I mean, it's kind of similar to Tampa Bay. You can't just focus on one line. That team is really deep right now. You know, I mean, it's not just Svechnikov and Teravainen. I mean, you've got Aho there. You've got, I mean, Jarvis and D'Angelo. These players have been hot lately. Trocheck as well. Like, you have to be on your toes at all times. And, kind of the same way with Tampa. They're just deep teams. You have to play your systems well, and especially against Tampa, stay out of that penalty box.
Well, with Tampa as well, they've been dealing with those injuries, whether it's Kucherov, Braden Point, and I've heard some, you know, chatter about Andrei Vasilevskiy. Does he deserve consideration for the Hart Trophy halfway through the year? What's your take on that? Because when some of those stars were out of the lineup, Andrei Vasilevskiy's really the driving force for this team and played that MVP level.
Yeah, Vasilevskiy's always been... I think he's finally been appreciated. You know, winning the Conn Smythe, I think everybody kind of clued into it's not just the team in front of him is that good. He is that good as well. But we're also kind of at that point in the NHL where he's not the only one. You know, Igor Shesterkin with the Rangers has done the same thing for them this year, and just the same way as Juuse Saros, who presumably the Vancouver Canucks are going to see in just under a week's time. That guy has been just sick, man. Like, I can't tell you how good this Saros has played this season. So I think for a goalie to get in the Hart picture, they have to be head and shoulders better than any other goaltender for the Vezina. And as good as Vasilevskiy's been, as good as Saros has been, as good as Shesterkin's been, Jari's even in that mix for me as well, Campbell, no one really stands out of that pack for me. I think the Vezina is pretty wide open. And because of that, I don't see a goaltender going for the Hart. I see it going to a forward, unless Cale Makar scores 35 goals. I think that's your X factor. I think he's in the mix at this point. He could end up, you know, high in the voting by the end of the season as well.
Well, you mentioned him. He scores another gem last night. And it's one thing to be productive, Mike. It's another thing to provide highlight after highlight and highlight. And as you mentioned, hey, that Hart Trophy, it's like this is the way you kind of create a narrative around your season. It's not just empty production. It's you are showcasing your skill set and you're attracting new eyes to the game, hopefully, scoring in this manner. It's unbelievable. And you look at what he's done at a per game basis, and you rank it against D-men across history, his name is in there. It's amongst the Borks and the Orrs and all this sort of stuff. It's wild to see what he's doing right now.
Yeah, I mean, toss Paul Coffey in the mix too. You know, this is not normal what Cale Makar is doing. I think he's up to 16 goals this year and, you know, just over 30 games or something. I mean, like, he's tracking towards 40 goals as a defenseman in the National Hockey League. And I had a conversation with Ian Cole today, and, you know, Ian Colson, I asked him, like, how have you adapted your game over the years? Because it's become so mobile for defensemen in the NHL. And he goes, you know, I've tried to get faster every year. He goes, but then you got guys like Makar who just, they do whatever they want out there. And and that's not like, it's not like Makar is like loose and does and just takes risks all the time. Like, this guy's on the right side of the puck. The puck is on his blade all the time. And to watch him just turn and burn to the net, cut to the net, put the puck right under the bar. Like, he looks like a forward goal scorer, like a 50 goal scorer in the league. And I thought this for a while. I think Makar is the MVP of the Colorado Avalanche. Even though McKinnon's got 11 points in six games, I think it's Makar. And everything goes through him. It's kind of similar to Adam Fox in New York. I just love watching those two defensemen play. I think they're the future of the league for the next decade.
You're listening to The People Show. We're joined by Mike McKenna. And Mike, pretty awesome return for Geno Malkin last night as the Pittsburgh Penguins played the Anaheim Ducks. And, you know, you look at what Pittsburgh's been able to do of late. And if Geno, we know he's a special player. He's getting up there in age, but last night showed us that he's still got that superstar level of play. How dangerous can Pittsburgh be down the stretch now adding a player like him?
Oh, they're legit. I mean, that you look to Pittsburgh, and that is a real-deal cup contender. And they've been through a lot of adversity so far this year. I mean, they've been missing at different times Crosby, Gensel, Rust. Just you can go down the list. They missed Malkin all season, you know. I think a lot of people don't realize how good Tristan Jarry has been for that team. He carried them when they were in trouble. His advanced metrics are pointy end of the NHL. His traditional numbers are as well. But now that they're getting their players back, now that Malkin's back in the lineup, he comes back, pops two goals like it's nothing last night. I mean, big slap shot on the power play. Like, that's where you're going to see the biggest difference, I think, for having Malkin back with Pittsburgh. Their power play was only clicking at about 17% going into last night's game. He helps that. He's creative. He's got great vision. He can shoot the puck. He's a one-time threat. So even one player coming back can really up your level. And I think Pittsburgh, really, for me, the biggest question is, can they end up, where are they going to end up in the Metro? Are they going to be a wild card? Or are they going to end up at the top of the list in the Metro? That's what I'm not sure of. Because to me, they're 9-1. They're going to come back down to earth. And the last 10 games are 9-1. But they are trending towards a team that should easily be contending with Washington and the Rangers, I think, at the top end of the Metro, along with Carolina.
Talking to Mike McKenna, former NHL goalie and NHL analyst at dailyfaceoff.com. As far as other guys that are coming back, Tuukka Rask, part of the goalie union for you. He's, you know, tracking towards, not playing tonight, but tracking towards a return for Boston. Has goaltending kind of been their Achilles heel, or is just, hey, this guy's a longstanding member of this team, bring him back, and now we get a familiar face back in, but do they need to figure out a couple other things across their lineup?
Yeah, I think you hit it pretty much on the head that this is somebody coming back in the lineup. He's been a longtime Bruin, and he brings a level of play that's top five in the NHL over the last decade. That's what Tuukka Rask has done for the Bruins. And early in the season, you know, I threw a little shade towards the goaltending in Boston. It took Ullmark the better part of the first couple months of the year to find his footing there. And he was hurt for a little while as well, but I actually really like Ullmark. I think he's got good game feel. He's got active hands. He accepts pucks. He rarely chases. Like, I think he's a good goalie when he's healthy, and I think that Swayman, despite being somewhat inconsistent this year, is going to project out to an NHL goaltender in Boston. He already is, but right now in the COVID world, having three goalies that you believe in, that's a big bonus. Because you're a day away from popping two positive COVID tests and you got nobody. So, you know, I look at this, if I'm Swayman, I'm just going to go to work, do my thing, let Rask come back. And I think Rask just gives some credibility. It gives that team some more confidence going into every game that they know what they're getting in net, even though it's been pretty good so far this year. It's still Tuukka Rask's net. So I see this as a benefit, as a plus for Boston. And I see it really as a plus for all three goaltenders. I think it's going to be good for them. It'd be good for Swayman to go play games. Just create some competition there.
He is Mike McKenna. Love talking to him. You'll hear him often on the People's Show here on Wednesdays at 1:30. Mike, appreciate it as always, man. We'll talk next week.
That sounds great. Everybody stay warm out there with the rain, not the snow. We're getting snow in St. Louis, guys. Can you believe that? Us Midwesterners? Oh, yeah. You give us 2-3 inches of that, man. We got the sleds out, so Okay. Can't wait.
Before we let you go, Mike, I see Buffalo is running out of goalies. New Jersey is running out of goalies. Are you going to suit up again? What's going on here? Is there a chance?
Oh, man, I was just talking to my old teammate, Craig Anderson, today, and I asked him, man, like, do I need to get my stuff in the bag and hit the road? He's like, yeah, you might, man. We lost two guys last night. So, you know what, though? My career is bad enough. I don't need to make it any worse. I'm happy to let the young guys get a chance and go out there and show us what they can do.
Well, we appreciate your media career. It's thriving. Thanks a lot, Mike. We'll talk soon.
Sounds good. Talk to you next week. Thank you.
That is Mike McKenna from DailyFaceoff.com and obviously former NHL goalie at MikeMcKenna56 if you want to follow along on Twitter. Man, it's a great point talking about that Boston crease right now. Just having three guys deep because look what's happened in New Jersey. Yep. Look what's happened in Buffalo. Things can change real fast for NHL teams in goal.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, you build out that position, especially with what Boston's expecting, right? Like those three teams in the Atlantic right now, there's some heavy hitters there. You've got Florida, you've got Tampa, you've got Toronto who beat Vegas yesterday. So, you know, come playoff time, you're going to need that depth. If you get in one of those playoff series, you're probably going to play one of those teams. You're going to have to make sure you're at full strength. Loading up, not a bad option right now. So I know there's a lot of chatter about Yaroslav Halak and where he's going to go. Well, you can scratch Boston off the list because he sure as hell isn't going there.
But it reminded me, like, just seeing the Devil situation right now, it reminded me of, like, the Broncos quarterback situation last year, right? And a scenario might develop where it's, who are you going to put in there? Is a scenario going to develop where an E-Bug has to start the game? Like it's getting that ridiculous that at some stage, like, what's going to happen? Do you postpone the game just because one position group is out, or do you try to do the thing of, you know, when you travel now, the goalies have to be, you know, hermetically sealed and put away, and all their team meetings they have to be separate from the group because you can't have, you know, these guys together because of how important it is.
Yeah, who's going to be the NHL's Kendall Hinton, a position player that's going to have to end up playing in the crease? That will be looking for.
It's very clearly going to be Alex Edler.
Oh, for sure. He's not healthy right now. So there you go. You got your backup goalie to the backup goalie to the backup goalie is hurt too. Shout out. We did talk about Evgeny Malkin there though. And wasn't that awesome to see though? Like I'm not going to hide it. I may be the president of the Evgeny Malkin fan club. He's one of my favorite players. I think he was so disrespected when he wasn't allowed in the included in that NHL 100 list. But you look at what he's able to do, and he's coming in fresh now after that injury and dealing with it. Like, I want to see, like, I'm on the Evgeny Malkin 5-year revenge tour where I hope he just lights it up. And every time he does, he looks at the NHL, says, oh, I'm not a 100 top 100 player, huh?
Exactly. Now, you know what it is? He's a prototype player. Right, if you dreamed up what an NHL center looks like, you know, Joe Thornton would be on that list. You know, Lindros, obviously, Malkin, but it's that massive body, wide shoulders, can skate really well, powerful stride. Like, he's the poster boy for, you know, what a center is supposed to look like. Barkov might be that right now as well. Obviously, there's players that, you know, play center and have success. But as far as, like, the dream package of what it looks like, Evgeny Malkin, for me, has been that since he's entered the league.
Vic, you know, 500-plus games. For players that have played 500-plus games, his 1.18 points per game is 14th all-time. Like, we're talking about a high-end player. But what I love about his game is he's chippy too, man. He plays a nasty game. Like, he will hack. He will get physical. He'll fight, as we've seen over the last couple of years as well. Just to your point, a prototypical player that, you know, a prototype player that also has an edge to his game, which is nice to see in today's day and age.
No, there was a game against the crazy game, the 8-6 game, right? Against Vancouver. The empty net goal is like a goal I like to reference a lot as far as a signal to what you have to do to compete in this league. Like, it's 7-6, game's over, puck drops, there's no reason to even finish out the final seconds because the puck goes in the Canucks zone, it's over. And Malkin is just gunning for the puck, out-muscles a D-man, sweeps the puck in the net, and, like, hey, go get the extra goal. And if you want to know what it takes to win, like, that's the message to say, hey, this is what you have to go do. And there's a star-level player doing that. It's one of my favorite Malkin moments, and it's a nothing goal against Vancouver, but it's just one of those teaching points that you can look back and say, hey, this is what it takes. This is what it takes to compete in this league.
I would argue that the most dominant playoffs we've ever seen, or at least in the last 20 years, 2009, put up 36 points as a young player. And, you know, Kucherov and what he did over the last little bit through the bubble year was, okay, you had a qualifying round, you had more games played, but go back to 2009. A young Geno Malkin and what he did, still on the top of the list for me.
100%. Pick Nazar, Randy Panda here. We got to run to break here. We'll be back in just a bit on the People Show. A lot to get into throughout the course of the show. We'll do some more wrong answers only. Plus, if you want to chime in, 604-280-0650, you can grab a phone line. We'll get to your thoughts on the other side here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.